Saraswati Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. Today we are reading from Canto 1, Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is entitled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. And we are on verse 37 today. Om Namo Bhagavate Tuvyam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tuvyam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tuvyam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tuvyam.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Om Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Vasudevaya Dhimahi.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Pradyumnaya Niruddhaya.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Nama Sankarshanaya Cha.
Om.
Om.
The sign of chanting the transcendental glory of the Lord.
The sign of chanting the transcendental glory of the Lord.
Nama.
Nama.
Offering obeisances unto the Lord.
Offering obeisances unto the Lord.
Bhagavate.
Bhagavate.
Unto the personality of Godhead.
Unto the personality of Godhead.
Tubhyam.
Tubhyam.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Vasudevaya.
Vasudevaya.
Unto the Lord.
Unto the Lord.
The son of Vasudev.
The son of Vasudev.
Dhimahi.
Dhimahi.
Let us chant.
Let us chant.
Pradyumnaya Aniruddhaya and Sankarshanaya.
Pradyumnaya Aniruddhaya and Sankarshanaya.
All plenary expansions of Vasudev.
All plenary expansions of Vasudev.
Namaha.
Namaha.
Respectful obeisances.
Respectful obeisances.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Let us all chant the glories of Vasudev along with his plenary expansions, Pradyumna, Aniruddha and Sankarshana. Purport. According to Pancharatra, Narayan is the primeval cause of all expansions of Godhead. These are Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. Vasudev and Sankarshan are on the middle, left and right. Pradyumna is in the right of Sankarshan and Aniruddha is on the left of Vasudev. And thus the four deities are situated. They are known as the four aides the camp of Lord Shri Krishna. This is a Vedic hymn or mantra beginning with Omkara Pranav, and thus the mantra is established by the transcendental chanting process, namely Om Namo Dhimahi, etc. The purport is that any transaction, either in the field of fruitive activity or in empiric philosophy, which is not ultimately aimed at transcendental realization of the Supreme Lord, is considered to be useless. Naradji has therefore explained the nature of unalloyed devotional service by his personal experience in the development of intimacy between the Lord and the living entity by a gradual process of progressive devotional activities. Such a progressive march of transcendental devotion for the Lord culminates in the attainment of loving service of the Lord, which is called prema in different transcendental variegatedness called rasas or tastes. Such devotional service is also executed in mixed forms, namely mixed with fruitive activity or empiric philosophical speculations. Now, the question which was raised by the great rishis headed by Shaunaka regarding the confidential part of Suta's achievement through the spiritual master is explained herein by the chanting of this hymn consisting of 33 letters. And this mantra is addressed to the four deities or the Lord with his plenary expansions. The central figure is Lord Shri Krishna, because the plenary portions are his aides de camp. The most confidential part of the instruction is that one should always chant and remember the glories of the Lord Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, along with his different plenary portions expanded as Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. These expansions are the original deities for all other truths, namely either Vishnu Tattva or Shakti Tattvas. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadachi Svapadamikam Mukam Karoti Vashalam Pangulangayate Virim Yatripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are seeing here in today's verse that Naradji's instructions to his disciple Vyasadeva continuing. He started instructing in the beginning of this chapter when Vyasadeva was feeling very despondent. And as we see in many pastimes in the Bhagavatam, Narad Muni usually appears whenever any person who is seeking spiritual truth is facing some problem or does not know the right track to follow. So usually Narad Muni appears to give instructions to these people. So here also Narad Muni appeared when Vyasadeva was feeling despondent. And he started giving him instructions. And in this verse, in fact before the couple of verses, he has started stressing the importance of bhakti yoga over the other processes of devotional service or the other transcendental activities which are recommended in various scriptures. So he is talking about the different aspects of bhakti yoga over the last few verses. In fact, in verse 35, he talks about how one can dedicate all the activities to Lord Shri Krishna. And in this way one can get perfection of their spiritual life. Or how one can render service to Lord Shri Krishna, direct service to Lord Shri Krishna. Or one can remember the Lord. And in this verse he is stressing about the importance of chanting the Lord's mantra or chanting the glories of the Lord. So Narad Muni is trying to cure the despondency of Vyasadeva in this way by giving him instructions of the superiority of bhakti yoga. In fact, he is delineating the superiority of bhakti yoga over all other processes. Like Prabhupada also mentioned in this purport, he is stressing that bhakti yoga is much superior over fruitive activity or empiric speculation or philosophical speculation, which many people are caught up in. Especially in India, we see there are so many different paths which are propounded by so-called gurus. And people just take to those paths and they just get caught up in those paths, without realizing what is the ultimate goal of doing all these spiritual activities. So Narad Muni, not only for Vyasadeva, but these instructions are also for people in general of this material world, that how they can transcend all these activities and how they should keep the goal in life of life in mind, which is to attain supreme bhakti to Lord Shri Krishna. So he was trying to, because Vyasadeva was feeling despondent, even though Vyasadeva had compiled so many Vedic literatures, and he had compiled the Puranas, he had compiled the Mahabharata, so many different literatures he had compiled, which were all meant for people to progress spiritually. But still he was feeling very despondent. And therefore Narad Muni came and he explained the reason of Vyasadeva's despondency. He said that although you have given so many Vedic literatures, you have just given people a license to enjoy in the name of the Vedas. What people will do is, now people will read these Vedic scriptures and they will find how to enjoy different activities which they have been doing. So that is all that you have done. You have not stressed the highest goal of life, and that is why you are feeling despondent. This is what Narad Muni is trying to tell Vyasadeva and explain to him the reason of his despondency. And we see also in Kali Yuga, we see especially in India, many people, they refer the Vedic scriptures. Like in Western countries, we see people don't even know the Vedas. They are just steeped into sense gratification, or they are just steeped into material enjoyment and enjoying their senses. They don't care about the Vedas. They don't try to know what's the goal of the human form of life. But in India, although there are many people who refer to the Vedas, But because their eyes are salved with the tinge of sense gratification instead of the tinge of love for Krishna, even when they read all these Vedic scriptures, all they are looking for is how they can enjoy their senses. And they are just looking how to keep, you know, getting entangled in the fruitive activities and how to continue their activities in this material world. So this is what Narad Muni is stressing to Vyasadeva, that because you have stressed so much of fruitive mentality in all the Vedic scriptures, and people are just enjoying in the name of that, and that is why your heart is feeling dissatisfied. So not only will people feel dissatisfied because they don't know what's the real goal of life, but because you yourself did not write down, or you did not mention, or you did not tell people about the ultimate goal of life, your heart is also feeling dissatisfied. And we see similar instructions which Narad Muni gives in the later canto, it will come in canto 4, to King Prachina Barhishat. Now King Prachina Barhishat was a great king. He was the emperor of the world, and he was the father of the Prachetas. He had 100 sons who were known as the Prachetas. And these Prachetas were so spiritually exalted that they went out for meditation, they went out for spiritual realization, and seeing their spiritual potency, Lord Shiva himself came to give them instructions on how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then following Lord Shiva's instructions, these Prachetas went into under the water and they performed or started performing austerities for 10,000 years. Now while the sons are on one hand so intensely occupied in trying to perfect their lives and trying to achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their father in the kingdom is completely entangled in fruitive activities. And he is doing so many Vedic sacrifices. Same thing which Narad Muni told Vyasadeva, that you wrote so many Vedas, but you have just promoted sense gratification and fruitive mentality. So this king Prachina Barhishat was also doing the same thing. In the name of Vedas, he was doing so many animal sacrifices. And he was completely steeped in fruitive activities, how to gather more wealth for his kingdom. That was just his consciousness. Now Narad Muni knew that he is the father of such exalted sons. So he wanted to really save King Prachina Barhishat. He felt so merciful towards him. So he again came to instruct him. And he tries to tell him that whatever you are doing is completely useless, because you are just wasting your life in sense gratification and fruitive activities, and you are not realizing that what is the ultimate goal of this human form of life. And King Prachina Barhishat was at least very humble. Many people don't even realize that they are engaged in fruitive activities and they need to rise above these fruitive activities. But King Prachina Barhishat was quite humble in this matter. So he accepts that yes, my intelligence is totally lost because I'm so entangled in these activities, and therefore I may not be able to understand what the instructions that you give me on the supreme goal of life. And we see the same thing even Lord Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2. Krishna says that people who are less intelligent, or ritajnana, whose intelligence is stolen, they are completely engrossed in material sense gratification or in fruitive activities in the name of Vedas. And they follow all these karmakanda sections of the Vedas. They worship the demigods, they do all these pujas, yajnas and all these things. But the ultimate goal is to just increase their sense gratification. And when people are involved like this in sense gratification in the name of Vedas, then what happens is their intelligence becomes totally restricted. Their intelligence does not open up to receive instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because their intelligence is totally preoccupied and totally absorbed in trying to gain more and more fruitive work in this world. In this regard, there is a very nice example which is given in the scriptures. Now, there was a Russian scientist, and he used to do lots of experiments with animals. Like, we see many products nowadays which are being sold not tested on animals. Like, people are now becoming very aware that how animals, you know, should not be used as guinea pigs for trying out various medicines or doing certain experiments. But this Russian scientist was doing an experiment on rats. So he had trapped a rat in a box, and he had kept two levers in the box to which he was supplying electricity. Now one lever he had applied some sweet, he was supplying some sweet nectar for the rat. On the other lever he was supplying a small electric shock. So the rat, when he trapped him in the box, the rat first went to one lever and he got a shock. So he retreated from that and he tried to go to the other lever and he got sweet. And then the rat was very happy, oh, in this lever I'm getting sweet. So he started enjoying the sweet from that lever. Now what the scientist did, after some time he slowly changed the setting of the lever. So the lever which was giving shock, he started supplying sweet from that lever, and the lever which was giving sweet, he started supplying shock from that lever. So now when the rat went towards the sweet lever, he got a mild shock. So he was totally confused. He said that, oh, I was getting some sweet from here, now how come I'm getting a shock? So then he tried the other lever and he started getting sweet from there. But because the memory was still there of the previous one, he was confused. So he was going from this lever to that lever, trying to judge where I'm getting sweet and where I'm getting a shock. And the scientist kept fiddling with the levers. He kept changing from sweet to shock to sweet. He started alternating the levers. So the rat was now totally confused. And his consciousness was totally engrossed. He kept going from one lever to the other, trying to get sweet, shock. He was keeping on getting these alternate things because the scientist was changing this. And then what the scientist did, slowly he opened the trap door of that box in which the rat was trapped. So what was there? For the rat, the door to liberation was open actually behind him. But by this time, the rat's consciousness had become so tuned and he was so absorbed in trying to find out which lever is shock and which lever is sweet, that he did not realize that the door to liberation is open for him. That he can just go out and he will have all the sweets in the world. He'll have freedom. But he kept going from one lever to the other. And that way his consciousness totally got corrupted. And he never realized that he can rise above all the sweet shock things and he can go out of the rat box. So this is the same thing which conditioned souls are entrapped in the material world. You know, sometimes we say salt and sweet. You know, there is a pastime in the Bhagavatam also. Sweet rice mixed with salt. So, you know, we try to get the taste of sweet rice in this material world. But in the material world, there is nothing available without sand mixed in it or salt mixed in it. So, this is the same thing which happened with the rat. Although he had the door to liberation open, he did not go out of that trap door or of that mouse box. And same way, we are also all trapped. We are not realizing that most of the people in the material world are not realizing that they can actually, their goal is to transcend all this sweet and salt and sweet and shock and go out of the material world. So when such people are engrossed, totally engrossed in these fruitive activities and trying to enjoy sweet while getting some shocks in between, then such sages like Narad Muni have to come to give a jolt to the people that, you know, don't get so entrapped in these material activities. The goal of your life is to rise above this and to do transcendental spiritual activities and go out of this material world. And we see that these jolts are given by sages during the many pastimes of Bhagavatam. One example of that is the saintly Vidura. Now his brother Dhritarashtra was so steeped in still trying to enjoy in this world that although all his sons had died, he was still living at the expense of the Pandavas. And then Vidura had to come and really give him a jolt. And if we read those instructions of Vidura, it will come in the first canto only, I think, down a few chapters. He gives such strong instructions to Dhritarashtra that actually you are like a dog who is living at the expense of the Pandavas. And he says that this Bhima who killed your own son, Duryodhana, and now you are living at his expense, why are you not leaving this palace? You just want to enjoy the comforts of the palace. You are not ready to leave the palace because your consciousness is still that of sense gratification. So Vidura had to come and give this jolt to Dhritarashtra. And then only Dhritarashtra's eyes opened and he left the palace and he went away. He and Gandhari both went away for self-realization in the forest. So different jolts are required for different people. And the sages are very expert, or sadhus are very expert in giving the required amount of jolt and the required type of jolt, judging a person, what the person is steeped in. So because different people are in different modes, usually people who are in the mode of ignorance, the jolt which sages give is that of fear. So only fear works for people who are in the mode of ignorance. Otherwise, they will not rise above that mode. So you have to show some fear, the fear of death or the fear of your future destination. And that is exactly what Narad Muni did to King Prachina Bharishad. He showed Prachina Bharishad when he came to meet Prachina Bharishad. He showed him in the sky his future destination. He said that look at all those animals which you have been sacrificing in the name of Vedic rituals. And those animals right now are waiting because they have suffered so much while you were sacrificing them in the yagyas. They are right now waiting for your death. And when you die, they will pierce you with sharp arrows and they will also torture you, just like you tortured them. And when King Prachina Bharishad saw that, he was a bit fearful and he got scared. And then he started telling Narad Muni that you please instruct me. My intelligence is lost because of doing all these activities for a long time. So you now instruct me. What should I do? And then Narad Muni instructs him through the allegory of King Puranjana, of how we are not the body but we are the spirit soul, and the activities of the body should not be limited. The activities should not be limited to the body but should be for spiritual self-realization. And similarly for mode of passion, the jolt which is required is that of gain. Because mode of passion means work, 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 work. All the time people want to work and get some fruit out of that work. Work, get some fruit out of that work. So we have to show some gain to them. And then people will rise. We have to show them that, okay, if you don't work on this bodily platform, then you will get so and so rewards. So people in the mode of passion, the jolt required is that of gain. And people in the mode of ignorance, the jolt required is that of fear, to bring them out. So such instructions Narad Muni and these sages keep giving in the Bhagavatam. And they are required for all of us. They are not just meant for the personalities at whom these instructions are directed. But they are required for all of us. Because we all sometimes forget the goal of life. Like Prabhupada mentioned in this verse, that the goal of life is to attain the loving service of the Lord, which is called prema, in different spiritual variegatedness called rasas or tastes. So the goal of life, or the goal of the human form of life, is to achieve this prema, or to achieve pure bhakti to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada says in many places in the Bhagavatam, that the perfection of your Krishna consciousness is when at the end of life you see Krishna face to face and Krishna smiles at you. That is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. But we are not able to see Krishna right now. And even when we come to try to see Krishna in the temple also, there are two, like we try to come to take darshan of Krishna. So there are two types of darshan people try to take. One is ku darshan and one is su darshan. Ku darshan is when we try to come to see the deity to enjoy. Like we want to enjoy the darshan of the deity. And if something, you know, if the pujaris have dressed them nicely, then we say, oh, they are looking so beautiful and all. But if sometimes, you know, something is not to our liking, then people start complaining that, oh, this is not right, that is not right, this, you know, this jewelry should have been like this. You know, people start complaining. So this is called as ku darshan, that we are trying to enjoy the darshan of the Lord. But vis-a-vis that, there is su darshan. Now, su darshan is when we come to be seen by the Lord. So our purpose of coming to the temple is that we want the Lord to see us, that, you know, the Lord sees that this devotee is trying to progress in devotional life and he's taking the efforts of coming to the temple to take my darshan. Even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, says that do your devotional services in such way that you are not always eager to see the Lord. Like, that is also there. We have to be eager to see the Lord. But do your devotional activities in such a way that the Lord is eager to see you and the Lord is eager to take darshan of you. You should become so qualified one day that the Lord is so eager to have your darshan. And this is called as su darshan. And in this connection, there is a small story which is mentioned in the Puranas of a blind Babaji in Vrindavan. Now this Babaji, although he was blind since a long time and he was very old also, but still he used to take so much efforts to go and take darshan of the Lord. And there was a group of young boys, like street boys we see in Vrindavan. They used to see this Babaji every day. And they used to think that, what is this Babaji doing? He is blind. Why does he take the efforts to go into the temple? What will he see in the temple? So one day they all gathered around the entrance of the temple and they started teasing that Babaji. They said, oh Baba, you are blind. Tum to andhe ho. They started teasing him. That you are blind. Then what are you going to see in the temple? You are not going to see the Lord. And then the Babaji turned around and told these boys. He said that, yeah, I may not be able to see the Lord, but that is not my purpose of going to the temple. He said, I am blind, so I am not able to see the Lord, but the Lord is not blind. He can see me when I go to the temple. So I am going to the temple so that the Lord can see me, not so that I can see the Lord. So this is actually called as Sudarshan, when we actually go to the temple to be seen by the Lord or to be enjoyed by the Lord. So even though, you know, at least, you know, people who come to the temple, either they do ku darshan or su darshan, but at least they are coming to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the temple. But there are some people who don't even realize when they see the Lord that this is the Supreme Lord. And again in the Bhagavatam, there are examples of this. We know of Duryodhan. Although he was seeing Lord Krishna face to face so many times during his lifetime, but he never realized that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And my purpose should be to surrender to him and not fight with the Pandavas on whose side the Lord is there. So he could not realize at all, even though he was taking darshan of the Lord every day. And there is one more pastime in the 9th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastime of Maharaj Sagara. So this Maharaj Sagara was performing an Ashwamedha Yajna. And he was about to perform the 100 Ashwamedha Yajnas as per the directions of his spiritual master, I think Aurva Muni. And as soon as he was about to complete, one personality got envious of him, which was Indra. So as usual, Indra stole the sacrificial horse because he did not want King Sagara to complete the sacrifices. And he hid the sacrificial horse somewhere. Now King Sagara had two wives, and from one of the wives he had 60,000 sons. And he sent these 60,000 sons. He says, okay, y'all go and search for the sacrificial horse and bring it back, because the Ashwamedha Yajna won't be finished if y'all don't bring this horse back. So the 60,000 sons go in search, and now these 60,000 sons from one of the wives, they were very proud. They were very proud of their opulences and of their prowess. So they go in search of the horse and they actually find the horse. Now this horse was standing next to the hut of none other than Kapila Dev, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And Kapila Dev was sitting there in meditation, and the horse was loitering around this hut. And the 60,000 sons, when they saw the horse, without thinking or without using their intelligence, because they were so proud, their intelligence was clouded. They could not, although they saw, they took darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they could not realize that this is the Supreme Lord. And they started saying that, kill him, kill him. He is the one who has stolen the horse. And because of their anger, they got so angry because of their passionate nature, their own fire killed them. They burned to ashes. All the 60,000 sons died on the spot, because they could not realize that this is the Supreme Lord and we should not be talking like this disrespectfully with the Supreme Lord. And then the other wife's grandson came. His name was King Anshuman. So King Sagara sends him now, and he comes to search for the horse. And then he comes and he sees again the horse loitering near Kapila Dev's hut. But this Anshuman was very, very intelligent, and he was a great devotee of the Lord. So he immediately realizes that this is the Supreme Lord. Kapila Dev is none other than the Supreme Lord. So then he goes to Kapila Dev and he surrenders unto him. And then he does not only get knowledge from Kapila Dev. Kapila Dev imparts so many instructions to him, but he also gets his horse back. So it's all the question of seeing, how we see the Lord. Whether, you know, we are taking Kudarshan, Sudarshan, or whether we are even realizing that the Supreme Lord is there in front of us, like Duryodhana and the other 60,000 sons of Sagara did not realize. So it is so difficult to see the Lord. We are realizing that it's so difficult to see the Lord, either because of our consciousness being steeped in fruitive activity or because our hearts are not full of love. So it is difficult to see the Lord because we ourselves are covered. We are covered because of our fruitive mentality with the three modes of material nature, and the Lord is also covered. So there are two coverings here. We are covered with the three modes of nature, and the Lord is covered by his yogamaya potency. And this makes it impossible to have darshan of the Lord. So even when we come to the temple, although we are seeing the form of the Lord, it is the deity form we are seeing, but the Lord is not revealing his real form of his two-handed form playing the flute in Vrindavan. He is not revealing this form to us, because we ourselves are covered with the three modes and the Lord is covered with his yogamaya potency. But what makes this impossible thing possible? That, you know, we are covered and the Lord is also covered. So it becomes so impossible to take darshan, to take real darshan of the Lord. But what makes this impossible thing possible is Shuddha Bhakti, or developing this prema in our heart, which Prabhupada is talking about and which Narad Muni is also stressing over the last few verses, the superiority of Bhakti Yoga over Jnana Yoga or over fruitive activities. So it is only through pure Bhakti, when pure Bhakti has developed in the heart, that we will be able to take real darshan of the Lord. Even to Brahma, this darshan of the Lord was not available. Or even to Indra, we know from the Krishna book, like from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Brahma could not realize that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because his heart was not full of love, or neither Indra during the Govardhan Puja, neither could Indra realize that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He tried to challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Krishna had to cut off his pride by performing the whole pastime of Govardhan Puja. But this darshan of the Lord, the real darshan of the Lord in his two-handed bending form, is available to the simple cowherd boys of Vrindavan, all the sakhas of Krishna, or all the sakhis, all the gopis of Krishna, because their hearts are full of love for the Lord. And that is why they are able to take darshan of the Lord. So even as sadhakas, the goal of our sadhana bhakti is to develop this pure bhakti in our heart, so that one day we can see Krishna. One day we can not just see the deities of the Lord, but we can actually see Krishna face to face, like Prabhupada mentions. Because this bhakti power, like Krishna is covered with yogmaya potency and we are covered with the three modes of material nature. But this bhakti power or the power of pure love in the heart is much, much more powerful than the power of Krishna to remain unrevealed or to remain covered from his devotees. And we see this during the Rasa Leela. Now when Rasa Leela was happening, Krishna suddenly disappeared from the Rasa Leela. And he went and hid himself somewhere. So the gopis and Radharani, they became so frantic. They started searching for Krishna here and there. They were like totally going to lose their lives in the pain of separation from Krishna. So Krishna, and then they came to a certain spot where actually Krishna was present. So when Krishna saw the gopis coming, he immediately took his four-handed Narayan form. And then the gopis came and asked him, you know, for them Krishna is their loving consort. They don't know that Krishna is the Supreme Lord or he is Narayan or he is the source of all creation. So they come and pay obeisances to Narayan without realizing that this is Krishna himself. And they ask him, where is Krishna? We are searching for Krishna. And then Narayan shows them the way that, oh, Krishna has gone that way. And then Radharani comes searching for Krishna. And she also takes darshan of Narayan and she also bows down to Narayan. And she also asks the same question that, have you seen my beloved Krishna? But because Radharani's heart is so full of pure love of Krishna, or because there is Shuddha Bhakti in Radharani, Krishna could no longer conceal his form. So immediately his two arms melted and he came back to his original Shyamsundar form. So this is the power of bhakti. It has more power than Krishna's power. Krishna could not keep himself hidden from Radharani. He had to reveal his form to Radharani because Radharani's heart was so full of love. So Krishna had to withdraw his Narayan form and reveal his true form to him. So as sadhakas, we also want to achieve this goal in life. We also want to come to that platform. We want to keep this desire strong in our heart that one day what Prabhupada is talking about, I should achieve that goal in my life through my sadhana bhakti. And that is the sadhya, prema pumartha mahan it is said. That is the sadhya of all the bhakti or all the devotional activities that we do. That one day I will see Krishna face to face because I have developed so much pure love in my heart for Krishna. In fact, Sankarshan Das Adhikari Maharaj was saying during his recent visit to Melbourne, he said that we have to do our devotional activities with so much love and so much feeling or so much absorption in whatever service we do for the Lord that we can continue that service for the rest of eternity. Now, whether that service is washing pots for the Lord or cleaning the toilets or cutting vegetables or doing paraphernalia room services or making hewicks, whatever service we are doing for the Lord, we have to do it with so much absorption that we can continue it throughout our life. Throughout eternity, we are ready to do that service. We should try to derive so much taste from that service. Because if we don't keep this bhakti part very significant in our life, then all other things will start becoming significant. And Jagatarini Mataji was saying this. She was giving an example of an elevator. So she was saying that when Krishna bhakti is not very significant and when devotional service is not very significant in our heart, then all other small issues of the world will become very large. They will loom very large in our face. So even if, you know, we see material especially, we see even if when grey hair develops, they get so fussed. Oh my God, I've started getting grey hair and they start thinking, what should I do? Or if they become fat, start becoming fat, then oh, I should do this, I should do that, I should try to cut off my fat, I should do this surgery. Just spend so much of money. They get so fussed about all these activities, about grey hair, about becoming fat, about not looking good, or about one wrinkle developing, and they will go for so many surgeries to get those wrinkles removed. This is because the other things have become significant in life because bhakti is not significant. And Jagatarini Mataji was giving the example of an elevator. She was saying that when we absorb ourselves in activities, transcendental activities like reading the Bhagavatam or hearing the Bhagavatam or doing our devotional services with absorption, then it is like taking an elevator and going high up. So when we take an elevator in a building and we start going high and high and high up, what happens is slowly the things on the ground floor or on the ground floor, they start becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. So as the elevator keeps rising, on the first floor the cars will be still a little big. Then on the second floor they will be a bit smaller. So let's say it's a 30 or 40 floor building, story building. So when we reach the 30th or 40th story, the car will be so small or the people will be like tiny dots on the ground floor. So this is like the elevator of Krishna consciousness. When we absorb our consciousness in Krishna and activities related to Krishna, it is like taking the elevator to the 30th floor. So at that 30th floor, we will, all the other things of the material life will become so insignificant, they will become so tiny that they will not matter anymore to us. So this is the power of bhakti, and that is the desire we have to keep strong in our heart, so that one day we can develop this pure love for Krishna, and one day we are so high up in this elevator of Krishna consciousness that all other things become insignificant, and what only matters is developing prema for Krishna in one of the five rasas. And one such example is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And today it's his appearance day, so we'll spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about this personality. Today it's the appearance day of Jagdish Pandit. So this Jagdish Pandit is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he is such a devotee of the Lord who had pure love for Krishna and pure love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his heart. So Jagdish Pandit was an associate of both Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as well as Lord Nityananda. He was Nityananda Sakha as well as Chaitanya Sakha as well. And it is mentioned in the Gaur Ganodesh Deepika that Jagadish Pandit and his brother Mahesh Pandit, or Hiranmaya he was called, both of them were eternal associates of the Lord, and in Krishna Leela, they were the wives of the Yagnik Brahmanas. So we know the pastime of the Yagnik Brahmanas. Krishna and Balram were playing in the forest, and they get so hungry that they tell the cowherd boys. Even the cowherd boys are hungry, and they tell Krishna and Balram, we are so hungry, we want to eat something. And Krishna and Balram tell the cowherd boys that just nearby in a place from here, there are some Brahmanas who are performing some yagyas, and they have prepared varieties of foodstuff. So please go and ask them for foodstuff, and we can satisfy our hunger in this way. So when all the cowherd boys go to the yagyic Brahmanas, they were so busy in performing, you know, chanting big, big mantras and performing the yagya. So when they ask them for that, you know, Krishna and Balram are in a nearby forest and they are very hungry, can you please give us some food to eat? So it fell on deaf ears. They were so busy in performing their yagyas and they were so steeped in their ritualistic activities that they completely ignored the cowherd boys. What to give out, tell them no, or what to give them food, they did not even reply or acknowledge their presence. And the cowherd boys were so disappointed. So they went back to Krishna and Balram. And they said that the yagyic Brahmanas are not even listening to us. What to think of, you know, saying no, yes, anything. So then Krishna and Balram say, okay, now you go to the wives of the yagyic Brahmana. And they are my pure devotees and they will give food definitely to you. So this time they go to the Brahmana's wives. And the Brahmana's wives had been hearing about the glories of Krishna and Balram constantly. They had never seen Krishna and Balram face to face. But in their garden, there was a gardener, or there were some ladies who used to come to tend the garden and to sell fruits and vegetables and all from Vrindavan. And from these ladies, they had heard the glories of Krishna and Balram. And just by hearing the glories, their hearts had become so attracted. And they had developed so much love for Krishna and Balram. So when the cowherd boys come and ask them for the food, they immediately collect all the bhoga they had prepared for the yagya. And they rush to Krishna and Balram to give them the food, without consideration of their husbands, that, you know, what our husbands will say, this was all meant for the sacrifice. So Jagadish Pandit, it is mentioned in Gaur Ganodesh Deepika that he was one of the wives of these Yagdik Brahmanas. And in another place it is mentioned that he was actually a dancer in Krishna Leela called Chandrahas. And he used to love to dance in front of Lord Krishna. And therefore when he came as Jagdish Pandit during the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to love to dance in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan parties. So this Jagdish Pandit was born in Guwahati in Assam, in modern day Assam. The village was called as Guwahati. And his father's name was Kamlaksha Bhatta. Now both his parents, his father and mother, both were pure devotees of Lord Vishnu. So they raised Jagdish Pandit and his brother Mahesh Pandit in pure Krishna consciousness, and they inculcated so much devotion to Lord Vishnu in their hearts. So when their father and mother passed away, Jagdish Pandit, along with his wife's name was Dukhini, and his brother Mahesh Pandit, all of them took a boat and they came to live on the banks of the Ganga in Mayapur. And they started living close to Jagannath Mishra's house, so close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's house. Now they had become very close, Jagdish Pandit became very close to Jagannath Mishra. And Jagdish Pandit and his wife Dukhini both had parental affection for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were in Vatsalya Ras with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is mentioned that sometimes Dukhini, his wife, used to even act as the wet nurse for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And she used to assist Sachi Mata in raising Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they had so much love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and little Nimai knew that these are my pure devotees and they have so much love for me. So we all know the pastime that whenever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to cry as a baby, And if only when devotees, his mother and all the other ladies of the house, they used to sing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or they used to say Hari Bol, Hari Bol, then only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to stop crying. So on one such occasion, little Nimai was crying and crying and crying, and it was Ekadashi on that day. And all the ladies of the house, including the father, Jagannath Mishra, they were all trying to chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra like Nimai wanted them to do always. But this time Nimai was not stopping at all from crying. And then they all got so confused and perplexed that what does this baby want? Why is he not stopping? So they asked him only that what do you want? Why are you not stopping to cry? You tell us and we will fulfill your desire. So then baby Nimai tells them. He tells them that in the house of Jagdish Pandit, they have prepared a huge bhoga for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. They have prepared nice rice preparations and all other preparations. And I want to eat that bhoga even though it is Ekadashi today. I want to eat the grains which have been prepared by Jagdish Pandit so lovingly for Lord Vishnu. And all the people assembled there were shocked. They were thinking that this is a small baby. How does he even know what is Ekadashi, first of all? And then how does he know that Jagdish Pandit has prepared such a big bhoga for offering to Lord Vishnu? So then they go actually to Jagdish Pandit's house. And Jagdish Pandit tells them, yes, today I have prepared a big offering to offer to Lord Vishnu. So they tell him that, you know, baby Nimai is crying and he wants to eat that rice offering which you have made for Vishnu. But Jagdish Pandit, because he was an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he knew that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Lord Krishna himself. So he very lovingly gives all the bhoga. He says, yes, please feed all this to baby Nimai. And then when Nimai eats all the rice and all the other grain offerings which Jagdish Pandit had made for his Vishnu deity, only then he stopped crying. And Jagdish Pandit was in so much ecstasy because he knew that Vishnu has directly accepted his offering. And seeing this ecstasy of Jagdish Pandit, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reveals his form as baby Krishna. So he reveals a nice blue colored baby boy form of Krishna with a peacock feather, and Jagdish Pandit and his brother both fall down unconscious in ecstasy. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just before taking sannyas, when he grows big, he orders Jagdish Pandit that you should go to Jagannath Puri and you should preach the glories of Harinam Sankirtan in Jagannath Puri as well. So based on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jagdish Pandit travels to Puri, to Neelachal, and he starts preaching the glories there. And then once when he wants to come back to Bengal, he starts feeling so much separation from Lord Jagannath because he used to take darshan of Lord Jagannath every day. And because he was an eternal associate of Krishna, he starts feeling so much separation that, oh, how am I going to take darshan of Jagannath now? What shall I do when I go back to Bengal? So he's crying and crying in separation. And then Jagannath appears to him in a dream and he tells him that, why are you crying like this? You take me with you. You take my deity with you. And parallelly he appears in the dream of the king of Orissa. And Jagannath instructs that king that, you know, when every 12 years the deity of Lord Jagannath is changed, that is the system in Jagannath Puri. So he tells that the deity which you have put in Samadhi, which was changed some time ago, you give that deity to this Jagdish Pandit who is crying in separation from me, and let him take me wherever he wants and let him worship me there. So the king of Orissa was very happy. So he calls Jagdish Pandit and he tells that, you know, Jagannath came to me in a dream and you please take this deity which was lying in Samadhi. You take him with you wherever you want to take him. And then Jagdish Pandit was although very happy, but he starts wondering that he's so heavy. And in those olden days, there were no aeroplanes or something like that, that he could just fly in the flight back to Bengal. So he's wondering, how am I going to carry? Because they used to walk in those days. So then again Lord Jagannath tells him. He tells him that, don't worry, I will become as light as a cock. And then you'll be able to carry, you'll just be able to carry me on a stick or a staff. And then Jagdish Pandit takes a big staff, like a big stick. And then he carries Lord Jagannath. He takes the help of two Brahmins. And then he starts carrying Lord Jagannath towards Bengal, towards Mayapur. Now on the way when he is carrying Lord Jagannath, they reach a town called Chakdaha. This was also on the bank of the Ganga, a little bit distance away from Mayapur. And at that place, suddenly Lord Jagannath becomes so heavy that he is not able, none of the Brahmins and even Jagdish Pandit, none of them are able to carry Lord Jagannath anymore because he becomes so heavy. And then Jagdish Pandit realizes that, okay, this is Lord Jagannath's desire. He wants to be worshipped in this place, and that is why he is so heavy that we are not able to move him away. And this is because this Chakdaha place had so much spiritual significance. In fact, when Lord Krishna was himself present, Pradyumna, his grandson Pradyumna, kills the Shambhara demon in that place. And even in Satya Yuga, when, you know, I mentioned about the pastime of King Sagara, So when all the 60,000 sons were killed, and then they asked their spiritual master, thinking Sagara asks his spiritual master, Orva Muni, that how can I revive these 60,000 sons? And he tells them that you bring Ganga down from the heavenly planets, and only when Ganga water touches them, they will be revived. So during that time, when I think there was a sage called Bhagiratha who was bringing down Ganga, and he struck his chariot wheel in this place called Chakdaha. So that is why it is called Chakda, Chakradaha, means his chakra of the chariot was stuck over there. So this place had lot of spiritual power, and that is why Lord Jagannath wanted to stay there. So Jagadish Pandit, realizing the desire of Lord Jagannath, he just installs Lord Jagannath over there, and he starts worshipping Lord Jagannath in that place. He constructs a nice temple for Jagannath. And he and his wife and his brother Mahesh Pandit, all three of them worship Lord Jagannath. So this place was called as Yashora Gram. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityanand Prabhu, because Jagdish Pandit was, you know, eternal associate of both these lords, they used to come regularly to Yashora Gram, and they used to hold festivals in Jagdish Pandit's house. Big, big Sankirtan festivals they used to hold. So in two or three occasions, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to visit Jagdish Pandit. And on one of the occasions, after holding a festival for a long time, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to depart, Jagdish Pandit's wife, Dukhini, she becomes so sad, and she starts crying in the pain of separation. She starts lamenting. She tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when you leave from here, I will feel so much separation from you. You had totally immersed us in Krishna consciousness and in love of Krishna during the Sankirtan festival, and now you are going away, my Lord. How will I survive when you've gone? So seeing her ecstasy and her pain in separation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives her a golden deity of himself, which was called as Gaur Gopal. So he gives this deity to him, to her, and he says that you worship me in this deity form, and I will eternally reside in this deity form in your house because you are feeling so much separation from me. So even today, this deity is being worshipped in Yashora Gram, along with Lord Jagannath, which Jagadish Pandit brought from Jagannath Puri, and also there are Radha Vallabha deities in that temple. So these are some of the pastimes of Jagadish Pandit, who was an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya, and who was also an eternal associate of Lord Krishna Bhagavan in Krishna Leela, and who had that love which Prabhupada is talking about, which is the goal of human form of life, to develop pure bhakti for Krishna and see Krishna face to face. So Jagadish Pandit was one such eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had so much bhakti for him that he was able to participate in the pastimes of the Lord. So we'll end over here, and we'll ask if there are any comments or questions or corrections.
Thank you very much for a very nice lecture. Where is actually Yashora Gram?
I'm not very sure, Roji, but it's a bit, little bit distance away from Mayapur. So it's between Jagannath Puri and Mayapur, somewhere there. But I'm not sure of the modern day term for Yashora Gram. But there is a railway station. When I was reading about Jagdish Pandit in one of the books, there is a railway station called Chakdaha. From there you have to reach Yashora Gram to take darshan of that Jagannath. So we'll end here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.